So tonight I want to speak a little bit about the nature of mind and how we investigate the nature of mind. And I've titled this talk, Not Inside and Not Outside. And I want to begin with a quote by Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah was a great Thai forest master. And he said, within itself, the mind is timeless, naturally peaceful, unmoving. Rest in this natural state. If the changing sense impressions cause the mind to forget itself, to be deceived and entangled, your practice is to see this whole process and simply return to original mind. When I read this quote, I quite loved it. I found it very inspiring and read it again and again for quite some time. Because very much this practice is about this process, seeing the whole process and simply returning to original mind. We use a couple of tools for this practice that we've already discussed a bit, mindfulness and investigation. And mindfulness and investigation help us understand this process, this whole process of perception, this process of knowing, this process of suffering and the end of suffering. We develop mindfulness by carefully observing. And what do we observe? We observe the present moment, our moment-to-moment experience, with a quality of attention that is balanced and non-judgmental. We might focus on the breath. We might hear sounds. We might be mindful of thoughts, emotions, sensations in the body. We might be mindful of pleasant sensations, and we might be mindful of unpleasant sensations. We simply know whatever arises in consciousness, and we know what passes in consciousness. There is a quality of bare attention that simply knows this is what is happening, moment by moment. Mindfulness is a very interesting mental factor because it's said to be a very pure factor of mind, and not like water in a glass. When we pour water in a small glass, it takes on the shape of a glass. When we pour water in a bowl, it takes on the shape of the bowl. When we pour water on a plate, it takes on the shape of a plate. But mindfulness is not distorted by the various conditions that it contacts. If mindfulness meets a painful situation, a sad situation, or a gleeful and happy situation, the mindfulness is not in pain, it's not hurt, it's not sad, and it's not delighted. Mindfulness remains clear and precise, no matter what is being known. Part of the aspect of mindfulness is knowing experience without interfering into it. I use the example of the flashlight, the torchlight, where we shine a beam of light on an object, and the mindfulness illuminates the object so it can be seen clearly. But we don't interfere with the object. We don't press in to the point that we dent it, that we distort it. So when we observe the sensations of the breath, we allow the breath to come and go as it naturally does. But we don't necessarily or intentionally lengthen the breath, or with the attention and mindfulness try to make the breath smooth or change it in any way. We just know it exactly as it is. Sometimes we think, oh, I have this terrible pain in my back, so I'm going to bring mindfulness to it to make it go away, to make it release, to make it relax. Well, it's not that it's bad to give attention and to maybe relax in and breathe into an area of pain. That can be useful. It can help the muscles relax. But it's not what mindfulness is. Mindfulness just knows the experience as it is. If it's tight, the mindfulness knows that it's tight. If it's sharp, we know sharpness. If it's rough, we know roughness. We don't need to smooth out the roughness. We don't need to relax the tightness. We don't need to change the experience to be mindful of it. Mindfulness has an inherent purity to it that meets the experience however it actually is. This is true with the physical pain, but it's also true with the mind. Sometimes we think, well, I'll be mindful of this sadness so that it will go away. Or I'll be mindful of this disturbing thought so that it will go away. It's a little bit of a... Sometimes we are mindful of a thought and it goes away, and so we think being mindful of it made the thought go away. But actually, thoughts and emotions are very short-lived. They arise and they change very quickly. And it's with the mindfulness that we recognize not just the arising of experience, but also the ending, the passing. So we start to realize how very ephemeral and changing experience is. But by being mindful of our emotions, by being mindful of our thoughts, we are not pushing those emotions or thoughts away. What we're doing is we're stopping fueling them. We're no longer holding on to them. We're no longer sustaining their existence. So whatever energy they came with, they exist for that period of time and they're gone. If we're not mindful, we usually fuel the thought with more thoughts or fuel the emotion with more reactions. So we compound the experience again and again, replaying it. When we're mindful, we just experience it as it is without needing to replay it. But the mindfulness doesn't push it away. And it doesn't stop it. There is a deep equanimity that comes with mindfulness, so that when we're cultivating mindfulness, we are clearing obstacles and allowing the mind to rest in this profound equanimity, evenness, openness to whatever is happening. It's a balanced state of mind. There are some common obstacles that occur in meditation practice that we'll be speaking of more as the retreat goes on. Some of the common obstacles called the five hindrances include desire, aversion, that energetic dullness or boredom called sloth and torpor that happens that, if it gets strong, can lead to sleepiness. And the opposite is a restlessness. An anxiety, a kind of agitation of mind, or doubt, confusion. Sometimes we just get lost in drifting thoughts, fantasies, plans, memories, and are a little bit unclear as to, well, what really is happening now? So mindfulness clears a lot of these obstacles, whether they're these classic hindrances or just a drifting kind of quality to attention. Mindfulness is usually in these contexts of retreat, we're trying to prompt the mindfulness. We're trying to encourage it to arise. We're trying to remind ourselves to be present. And you might find that you come into the hall with the best of intentions. You're coming in to be present. But you sit down and feel the breath and feel the sensations for a few minutes. And the next thing you know, you don't know how much time has passed, but you were lost in some thought about something that happened on a different continent in a different year with people that are not in the same room. And you wonder, how did I get there? It's very interesting to watch how the mind can create a whole world that it lives in that has nothing to do with our reality. And we might even open our eyes and say, where am I? What's actually happening here? Just to come back into presence. So each time we can come back into presence, each time we can pull the mind back from drifting thoughts and reconnect with the body, reconnect with the breath, we're reinforcing and encouraging that clarity of wakefulness, of mindfulness. But mindfulness sometimes can arise spontaneously. There's an aspect of awareness that does not need to be prompted. It's very natural. We're simply aware. Spontaneous wakefulness as we experience our lives. We'll know what's happening in the present moment whenever we know what's actually happening. We could be said to be mindful. And when the mind is clear, not clouded, not distorted by hindrances or reactivity, then we experience that deep balance that allows us to see clearly for insight to arise. The Zen Master Dogen said, "The human mind has absolute freedom as its true nature. There are thousands upon thousands of students who have practiced meditation and obtained this realization. Do not doubt the possibilities because of the simplicity of the method. If you cannot find the truth where you are, where else do you expect to find it?" As we develop mindfulness, we'll realize that we can be mindful not just of the breath and not just of the body, but of any experience at all, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. It's described in the tradition as being mindful on contact with sensory experience, and the mind is considered one of the senses in Buddhist practice. We'll know anything that occurs in mind or body. We'll know experiences related to form, and we'll also know the formless experiences of space, of nothingness, of absence of consciousness. We'll know gross and coarse experiences, and we can be mindful of subtle, refined experiences. As mindfulness develops, we encourage it, it grows, and it becomes more and more accessible. We'll find that it arises with less and less effort until we find that we are very naturally wakeful much of the day. And then the mindfulness is not limited to any particular experience. It's not limited to pleasant experiences. It doesn't avoid unpleasant experiences. We're at ease in the experience of the original and undefiled mind. Awareness manifests not just when we're sitting in stillness, but it manifests in every waking moment, regardless of whether we're moving or still. When I lived in India with my guru, Punjaji, I always, before I met him, I had loved meditation. And so when I went to live with him and serve him, I still enjoyed my meditation practice. And sometimes I would sit down, cross my legs, and enter a very quiet, blissful, peaceful meditation. And I'd be there only a matter of seconds before he would interrupt me. And he'd see me sitting, and so he'd go send me to go get some water or to go fetch this or that, to run to the store and get another container of milk, or to go to the bazaar and order some something or other. He'd send me on all these different errands, and it took me a few days to realize that he did that any time I sat down and was really, like, really nice. And, you know, as a good student, I jumped right up and I went off doing the errands. And I realized very quickly that awareness was unchanged. It didn't matter if I was sitting still and peaceful, you know, in the room, or if I was out in the neighborhood at the shops, or if I had to order, get a rickshaw and drive across town and then bargain in the Indian bazaar for some little item of something that he wanted. Awareness was unchanged. And this was a very important discovery for me because it told me something about meditation that I hadn't realized before. Because before that, I would really privilege the sitting posture above everything else. To me, there was nothing more important than sitting with my eyes closed. And it was only in that experience with Poonjatji that I really understood that it didn't matter what posture our bodies were in, and it didn't matter whether our eyes were open or closed. But what really mattered was how were we encountering anything at all? Were we creating the causes of suffering, or were we simply with what is in a clear, simple, pure, unconfused, and uncontrived and unbound way? Could we be free, whether sitting or in activity? From that experience on, I stopped linking my peace of mind to my sitting practice, which itself was very liberating. Peace, joy, understanding, these are not dependent upon any posture we take or any activity we do. They're not dependent upon a technique. Awareness is not limited to any particular effort that we make. Whether it's a profound spiritual moment that occurs, or whether it's a simple, ordinary event, can we recognize that moment for what it is, pure and simple? When we drop into awareness and drop out of our personal dramas, we experience a knowing that is unchanged by time, that is not disturbed by any perception, that's always aware and clear and free and empty. Sometimes we might get swept away for a moment because we experience some sensory experience, some contact. We might see something beautiful and get swept up in the joy and the delight of it. We might forget for a moment where we are, what we are. We might forget that we are aware because we're lost in the drama of the experience. We can get lost in the drama of our own meditations, of our own emotions, of the stories of our lives. But if we let go of holding on to anything in particular, let go of holding on to an expectation we have for a peaceful meditation, let go of a particular quiet, deep state that we experience in the meditation, let go of an idea of a correct meditation practice, so that we can abide free, not clinging to any particular form, and also not clinging to a formless experience or an experience of emptiness. This practice leads us to liberation, not to become expert sitters. Chickens are pretty good sitters. I hope we may not ever surpass their ability to sit, but I think we can free our minds in another way. the mind can trick us sometimes. So I think it's helpful to have a trust in a naturalness to awareness, but also have a lot of skepticism about our own minds and to keep asking questions. One of my favorite questions that I ask is, what's happening? You know, just simply, what's happening? What's real now? What's actually occurring? I mean, I ask myself that question again and again and again. And it's amazing how frequently I'm surprised. You know, if I'm lost in a thought, I ask, oh, what's happening? Oh, I'm thinking. But I'm also sitting in a room where I forgot I was. It can be a very, very simple questions can end up becoming very useful and very profound. Over the course of my practice, I've tried a whole lot of inquiry questions, questions to contemplate, questions to hold. But my favorite one is, what's happening? What's happening? Some of the more traditional ones, the Korean Zen master, well, many Korean Zen masters actually use the one, just, what's this? What's this? Or what is it? What is it? Or what is this? Ramana Maharshi used the question of, who am I? You know, asking the question, who am I? But I still like, what's happening? What's actually occurring? Ramana Maharshi, there's a book about Ramana Maharshi, because he said, that's titled Be As You Are. He said, be as you are, wherever you are. Isn't that a lovely instruction? Do we think that we could be somebody else or be different than we are at any particular moment? If we follow this instruction to be as you are, wherever you are, would it be an easy instruction or a difficult instruction? Is it even possible not to be? And yet, so often, we don't really know ourselves as we are. Ajahn Chah said, people have asked about my own practice. How do I prepare my mind for meditation? There is nothing special. I just keep it where it always is. They ask, then are you an arhant, an awakened one, an enlightened being? He says, do I know? I am like a tree full of leaves, blossoms, and fruit. Birds come to eat and to nest, yet the tree does not label itself. It knows its nature. It is as it is. Sometimes I think meditation practice is a time to just know ourselves as we are, to follow our nature, and to be as we are, to grow familiar with that potential for pure presence. But the tendency is to have a little glimpse of awareness and then to stray from that peaceful clarity into a world compounded by thought, by personality, by worldly concerns. We have the tiniest little experience, and immediately we start thinking about who we're going to tell it to. Maybe somebody on the retreat, like a teacher, or it may be somebody at home that we are in a relationship with, and we want to describe to them what a wonderful time we're having, or what a miserable time we're having, or how enlightened we are, or how stupid we are. It may be the person who suggested we come to the retreat, and we think we're going to really get them when we get home. Or we're going to be so grateful to them because we had this experience, and we're going to give them flowers, or this or that. Sometimes we just have the littlest experience, and we go right off, creating a whole social fantasy around it, turning that experience into a kind of story. I encourage you as much as possible to let the story go and to let the experience mature. Don't rush to tell somebody what's happening, and don't rush to ask a question. Let the difficulties mature. Tease out different possibilities. Try different experiments with mindfulness to get to know the obstacles. And when some insight occurs, also dwell with that for a while and let it mature so that we can go very deep and let that the experience of our minds resonate very profoundly and very deeply. Mindfulness and investigation are some of the primary tools that we use in this practice. We use them in order to know our experience, to observe the places that we get caught, the ways that we create a story about ourselves, how we identify with experience. Do you ever wonder why, of all the different thoughts that pass through the mind, only certain ones really hook you and carry you off? Of all the different sights that you see and all the different sounds that you hear, only certain ones trick you into losing awareness, reacting with desire, reacting with aversion, with anger, with frustration. It can be very interesting to get to know what our triggers are, what things we react to very quickly. And they point to areas of attachment and clinging. We'll see the problem of attachment very clearly in the meditation practice. This is a good thing. The more clearly you see attachment, the more clearly you see how you get caught, how you get hooked, the easier it will be to free the mind and to effortlessly return to that bare and simple present awareness. The Buddha used the illustration of fishing, where a fisherman puts a bait on a hook and casts it into the lake, and a fish, wandering around in search of food, sees the bait and grasps a hold of it and, ouch, you know, gets caught on the hook. And like that, we're wandering through the world with various sensory experiences. And we see something or we think something and we grasp a hold of it. And then we feel the pain that's caused by the grasping. There are different approaches to mindfulness practice, and some mindfulness practices emphasize attention to the object of perception, the sensations, the thoughts themselves, and we look very clearly at what is happening in experience, so that we experience the sensations, the pain, the pulsing, the pressure, the thinking, the emotions, the hearing, the sounds, and we experience the changing aspects of those sensations, the impermanence of things. There are three primary characteristics that we experience: the impermanence, the unsatisfactoriness or unreliability of things, and the emptiness, the aspect of not of that we can't find an inherent existence in things. These are called in Pali, anicca, dukkha, and anatta. And I think we'll speak more about these as the retreat goes on. But when we're mindful of objects, we're not just concerned with, oh, that is a breath, that's an in-breath. But we want to feel the changing sensations of the breath so that we can bring the mind to the more subtle bring the attention to the more subtle aspect of observing change rather than just observing breath. When we feel pain in the body, we might know, oh, my knee hurts. Well, can we feel pulsing and tingling, throbbing, and notice heat, Notice if the heat increases or the pulsing decreases, if it stops and starts or runs strong and steady, because we want to notice that changing nature of experience, anicca, impermanence. There are other aspects of mindfulness or approaches to mindfulness that instead emphasize the awareness, the sense of subjectivity, how I forms in relationship to contact. So in a moment of experience, we might sense not just the pulsing of the sensations in the knee, but suddenly we're really have this strong sense of this is my knee. I am hurting. And what we become mindful of then is the process that gives rise to what in the text is called I making or mine making. I making is the process of identifying with experience, and mine making is the process of possessing things. So we use mindfulness and investigating to explore I making and mind making as vividly as we explore the sensations of breathing. There are other approaches to mindfulness that emphasize our view or our attitude, literally our relationship to experience. And in an approach like this, we would look into the arising of wanting or not wanting, desire and aversion. When that pain in the knee happens, does it trigger aversion, anger, frustration, judgment? Or does it trigger a desire? Do we suddenly start thinking about lunch and wonder how long until lunch? And I hope it's wonderful because we're moving towards a pleasant hope to move away from the unpleasantness of the knee. So it asks the question and it invites us to be mindful and to investigate our relationship to experience. I don't think it matters which direction you look, whether you're noticing the changing nature of experience, whether you're investigating the eye-making or the mind-making, or whether you're exploring your relationship to experience through desire and aversion, or any of the other myriad approaches to mindfulness. In every direction, we see the nature of things as they are, and we see through the distortions of delusion. Any object of attention can be a basis for conflict and clinging and struggle, or for liberation and insight, depending on how we relate to it. If we're not diligent in our practice, we might cling to the breath or to body sensations in order to get a particular feeling that we recognize as a meditative experience. But really, we're just clinging to the form of meditation. I don't know for sure, but I wonder if perhaps Poonjaji was pushing me to the bazaar because of an attachment to the sitting posture. That's clinging. It may be pleasant, but it's not freedom. We might also be clinging and attached to emotions and thoughts as a way of exploring, but becoming attached to a personal identity, to a sense of being the person we want to be in life. But this construction of an identity limits us. Can we instead just be? Without having to be someone, without having to construct an identity, but just be as we are. Nothing else, nothing special. We may cling to love, to feelings, to bliss, to devotion as a way of securing a sense of our heart in practice. Even pointing to emptiness or primordial awareness, pervasive awareness, can be a way of leaning the mind on a concept, of holding the mind up with a crutch. We might create a sense of being a meditator. And then we create a school of thought to identify with, and we develop a goal, a path, a mission, something to accomplish in the spiritual arena. One of the great dangers of creating the idea of being a meditator is we usually then decide whether we're a good meditator or a bad meditator. And almost everybody decides that they're either a good meditator or a bad meditator based on whether or not their last sitting was pleasant or unpleasant. And I think you'll find that any teacher that you speak with doesn't care at all whether your sitting is pleasant or unpleasant. Because some sittings are going to be pleasant and some sittings are going to be unpleasant. Some walkings are going to be pleasant and some walkings are going to be unpleasant. Some moments are going to be pleasant and some moments are going to be unpleasant. Some experiences will be one way and some experiences will be the other. And a good experience, a spiritual experience, a clear experience has nothing to do with whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. We don't look at all to that feeling quality of pleasant and unpleasant. We look to see whether we are clinging, whether we are attached to it, whether there is a cause of suffering in there, or whether the mind is free and clear and balanced and simply knowing the experience as it is. For most meditators, this is a rather radical shift. I don't know how many of you were hoping that you'd have all pleasant experiences. Now, you may not admit to that, but sense whether or not you really were wanting pleasant experiences and resisting any unpleasant ones. In both gross and coarse ways and subtle ways, delicate ways, we recognize the times that we move away from that easeful, open knowing of experience. We notice when we choose grasping and tension over freedom and release. We notice when we forget where we are. We notice when we are not mindful, and so we come back into wakefulness. We notice how we pick up and grasp a hold of different concepts and ideas, different beliefs. Oh, I like this thing, and I don't like that thing. This one conforms to who I want to be, and oh no, that thought, it's really not what I'm like. We notice then how we move away from a natural ease of presence, of peace, and choose suffering and confusion and irritation instead. There is a choice. It's not a choice that we can make every single time. We can't prevent unpleasant experiences from happening. But there is a moment when we can choose to continue to hold or to let go. There's a moment when we can choose to stay lost in fantasy and thought, or to just come back to the painful reality of the pleasant present moment. Or when we get lost in thoughts that are pleasant and we let that go to come back to the simple fact of sitting here, being here. When we ask that question, what's actually happening? What's going on? What's this? It's important to know where we ask that question, because we don't go outside with the question to ask objects that change, to ask books, to ask teachers, to ask traditions. We don't go inside with the question either to quietude, to emptiness, to the subtle nuances of perception, to our feelings, to our senses. We neither go outside nor inside. Then where do we ask the question? when we're not swinging on this hinge back and forth of being preoccupied with external objects or looking inside to the perceiver, to what knows, then where is knowing active? Where is knowing known? Where does awareness abide? Sometimes we may get a glimpse of something beyond concept, of a clarity of awareness that is not bound by any of the distortions of self-interest, of grasping, of identification. It's just pure and clear awareness, and we sense it as a moment of experience. But then we get caught again. We grab a hold of some hook with some bait on it. And then we sit again and we plod along in our meditation practice and we get another glimpse. And then we get caught again and another glimpse and we get caught again. It's said that we may graze like sheep in a pasture that graze all day long, but they've grazed so far astray that they get lost. Poonchaji used to say that people go shopping. Well, of course we go shopping. But he said they go shopping all the time, and they get so lost in the distractions of the things that they want to get and the things that they want to do that they forget their way home. So I invite you to not be seduced by the contacts with the senses, to not be seduced by the stories of the mind, to not be seduced by the tales of your life, and to come home, to find that home within us, to trace our steps back from the supermarket until we discover what is a true home. When we find ourselves lost in an experience of the senses and we're strongly identified, I am experiencing this, I want that, we trace that I thought back to where it arose and we let it rest there. Just rest there. In pure and clear awareness. So whether you're exploring the impermanence of the objects of the senses, or whether you're inquiring into this arising of I and mine, and discovering where that arises from, ultimately, there is nothing to grasp and nothing to move toward, nothing to move away from and nothing to avoid, nothing that must be investigated and nothing that is unknown either. It's said that nothing has ever arisen and nothing has ever passed. And it interested me that when somebody wrote a biography of Poonchaji's life, it was a 3-volume set, that they chose the title with Poonchaji's blessing. It may even have been his suggestion. The title was Nothing Ever Happened. Isn't that a great title for a 3-volume biography? Nothing ever happened. If we have that attitude over the dramas of our own lives, imagine the peace that we could know. The Buddha said something a little different, but kind of similar, where he said, nothing but suffering arises and nothing but suffering ceases. So I'll end again with the quote from Ajahn Chah. Within itself, the mind is timeless, naturally peaceful, unmoving. Rest in this natural state. If the changing sense impressions cause the mind to forget itself, to be deceived and entangled, your practice is to see this whole process and simply return to the original mind. Let's have a few silent moments. May all beings rest in unfabricated wakefulness. May all beings see clearly the nature of things. May we be free of suffering.